Welcome to Spook Pod. This is Courtney.
And this is Emily.
I'm always on time.
Yeah. As we're like 40 minutes late starting this recording.
Listen, the day got away from me a little bit.
What have you been doing?
Nothing, which is the problem. Like, I was like, oh, I don't have to podcast until later. So I settled into like a real deep nothingness. And then when I looked at the clock and was like, the void has swallowed me. And then I like tried to get up and like whatever. And I literally opened stuff and was like working on my document. And then I was like, I should shower. And then you messaged me and were like, I'll be home in 20 minutes. And I was like, I should shower.
And now here we are. Yeah.
And now here we are.
Here we are. And we have a brand new case for you today that I worked on. It's an interesting one, I think.
We'll let the audience be the judge of that.
You can't talk and shift at the same time. This is like a rule for podcasting.
I can make as much horrible noise. Listen, I was listening to this podcast. Oh my gosh. It's actually a podcast that I really enjoy, but the ambient sound in this podcast drives me bonkers. And
what
the
podcast?
Guy, like, literally, what podcast?
Yeah, well, maybe we shouldn't name it. That's not very nice.
I don't know if I'll name it. You'll actually, so if you enjoy Supernatural, the TV show, there is a Supernatural rewatching podcast called Ghost Facers. And I actually know one of the guys who does Ghost Facers, but I didn't know that when I started listening to the podcast. I just was like, oh, I like Supernatural. And then as I was listening to it, I was like, this guy's voice is like crazy familiar. I went to university with him and he's actually like really funny. And it's a little bit of a saucy podcast, like X-rated. Like the thirst for Dean is real between the two gentlemen that do the podcast. Anyways. But he coughs like a lot during like a lot of the first seasons of the podcast. And I'm into like the fifth or sixth season now. And he like, I don't know what's going on, but he coughed himself into like passing out, like, and they left it in the recording. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I usually listen to it when I'm driving. And so it's so distracting to have like coughing happening while you're driving and trying to listen to a podcast. And so I was just like, I just appreciate Courtney's editing so much because
yeah, I take that out every
whenever
noise
we're disgusting,
you make,
yeah. Yeah.
Whenever you like breathe in too hard, you're like, I take that out for you. Don't
yeah,
worry.
I appreciate it. I do, because I know that they get out sometimes. I try to be conscious of what I'm doing, but every so often
well,
I just have a day where
hard
I'm
to,
like
you're talking
heavy
like a
breathing
human.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. It's hard. I get it, don't worry. I like normally when you're talking I'm sitting here like just breathing, like you can just hear me breathing, so
making
and I
mouth
still
noises
have a little bit of a cold.
All the time.
I've had a cold for about a week now. It sucks, but it's still here, so if I cough I will edit that out.
Oh my gosh, the pod we tried to do like a couple weeks ago when I was sick and I was like dying in the beginning of it. I did not. I was like, I don't think we're going to make it. Oh God.
Yeah.
It was way, whatever you heard, it was about 40 million times worse.
Yeah. That is the power of editing.
Anyway, sorry for our tangent. Back to the actual like murder case.
Yeah, let's dive in. So today's case, it's known as the Barn murder because it happened in the small city of Barn, which is
not inside a barn.
Not inside a barn. This barn has two A's because that's how the Dutch do it. Barn. But Barn is kind of near Utrecht, one of the bigger cities. I was actually in Utrecht yesterday, so I was right near there. But this was
so you're the one that did the
well, I mean, it happened in the 1960s, so I wasn't born yet, but
time traveler.
You know what? I wish, but yeah, so this is a very famous and high profile case from the 1960s. So let us dive in. It all starts on Friday, October 27th, 1961, when the bones of a 14-year-old boy were found in a well covered in quicklime on the property of a big villa in Barn. But this wasn't just any villa. This was the villa that was the home and business space of a very prominent and mega rich family. They were called the Henny family. And they were so rich that their house even had a name. It was Hausa Canton, or Canton House. So before we dive more into the case, I just want to go back in time just to give you a little bit of a history to how prominent this family was, because it really plays into what happened in this case. So, and also just a little note, like the family history that I found online, it just shared like the males, like going down the line, only the males, because, you know, patriarchy. So
yeah, wonder why that happened history.
So that's all that I'm going to be speaking on in this story, but that's also like the people that were interested anyways in this story. So the family line starts in the Netherlands all the way back when a man named Christian Henny, who was born in 1760, he settled in the Netherlands. He was from another country, I don't know which one, but he moves to the Netherlands and settles there. And he had four sons, one of whom is named Johannes Henny. He was born in 1791. Now, Johannes was a simple syrup manufacturer, but his son, who was also named Christian Peter Henny, he would bring the family into a very notable position.
Can I just say that I hate that trend in history where you just like name your kid your name?
Dude, they're all named Christian, so you're going to get super confused.
I hate it. I hate it so much. Like literally, that's like me pushing out a kid and being like, ah, Emily, welcome.
Welcome, Emily. I know, yeah, I hate it too. It gets so confusing, and I'm hoping that I like explain this okay, because they're literally all named Christian.
Do you have to like call them like Christian, Christian Jr., Christian Sr., Christian the Second, Christian the Third?
No, they all have different middle names, so I've been kind
of
like...
Or you could do the Canadian or American version where they don't even put the seconds and thirds, they just go Junior, Junior.
Oh, that's even worse.
I hate when people... I'm like, that's such a redneck thing. You've just... Ha, I'm Albert Junior, Junior. Like, no.
Get your own name. Not.
Stop stealing. Plagiarism.
Okay, so anyways, Johannes' son, named Christian Peter... He was born in 1819, and he would eventually become the president of the Court of Appeal and a member of the Municipal Council in Arnhem, which is a city, as well as a member of the Provincial Council of Gelderland. So he really like made a place for himself and really brought the family into the public eye at that time. And Christian Peter also founded an insurance company called Conservatrix, and this would bring the family a huge fortune.
What a, like, super modern name for the time that they're in. Like, I just feel like Conservatrix is, like, so,
I know.
Like, early
you
2000s.
Know what? So I actually kind of think maybe it was renamed over the years, but this was the only name that I could find. So.
Okay, because I was like, just like, damn, that guy was ahead of his time.
Yeah, I was like, that is a weird ass name for the 1800s. I feel like it was renamed, but I don't know any other name, so we're just going with that's what it's called, Conservatrix. So Christian Peter, he also had three sons, one of which was Christian Albert Henny.
I hate it.
He was born in 1860. Yeah, tons of Christians. So stay with it. Stay with us. So Christian Albert had one son, whom he named after his father. So the son.
And therefore himself. I'm okay. Sorry, but he actually named his child
like
Christian Peter
name.
Again.
Yeah, Christian Peter.
Why?
I don't know. Really love this name. So right. Now we're at a second Christian Peter Henny. He was born in 1902.
This is why every single one of my ancestry charts is so messed up, because I can't tell if it's a different person or just someone spelling a name wrong. Okay, it's fine. Let's go back.
And this Christian Peter, he had two sons. We get some different names here. So his sons, oh crap, I wanted Erwin to pronounce these for me before I said them on this show, but I forgot to ask him.
Best wishes, because I'm looking at him like, mm.
So his sons were named Franz Bodewijn Henny and John Ewout. It's spelled E-W-O-U-T. I don't know how to
say it. It looks like, what?
A what? So they were born in 1943 and 1944, respectively. And they were both...
Don't they call those, like, Irish twins when there's, like, barely a year between...
Yeah. They were born, like, one of them, I think, was born, like, at the beginning of 1943, and the other one was, like, later in 1944. So kind of almost 2 years apart, but it just happened that, yeah, consecutive years. So these guys, they go by their middle names, so Bodewijn and Ewout.
Why? When you really have semi-normal first names, why are you like, whip out the weird
Yeah, Franz and John. No, we got to call them Bodewijn and Ewout.
Ewok. Yeah, Ewok.
Yeah, I really apologize that I don't know how to say that name good in this episode. I forgot to ask
Especially
everyone.
If there's anyone in current times named that name.
Sorry for butchering it. But these two guys are going to feature very prominently in our story today. They're like the main characters. So really in this whole story, like in all of these names that I just told you, you just need to know the last three, which is Christian Peter Henny, who is their father, and then Bodewijn Henny and Ewout Henny, his two sons. They were the family that were living in Canton House at the time that these bones were discovered on the property. So the company Conservatrix, it was founded by Bodewijn and Ewout's great-grandfather, and then it had been passed down to the males in the family line ever since. So like whoever was the next male, like the son would then become the owner, CEO, all that jazz, and it just kept getting passed down in the family line. So
thank God they didn't pass it to a feeble-minded female.
I know, right? Not that Bodewijn and Ewout did anything good with it. Anyways, so yeah, this kept the family, like, they were incredibly prominent, incredibly rich in the Netherlands because of this company. And they were so, like, prominent in the Netherlands that they would go on to be included in the Netherlands Patricat. So this is informally called Het Blauwe Boekje, or the Little Blue Book. But it's basically a book that is published every single year containing the genealogies of very important Dutch non-noble families. So basically like the mega rich families. I know a lot of countries do this type of thing where they have like a book, and if your family is in the book, then you're like somebody, you know?
I don't know if ours is so much a book, but I know that like even locally we have, they're called like the Sunshine Group or something. Like it's something like you've made, they always say like, oh, you're part of the Sunshine Group. And it's when someone makes like $100,000 or more a year in a position, they get like they're part of this group. So it might just be a local thing for me.
I know that like the British did this, like the...
Of course, the British were super into this. No shade to the Brits, but they've been,
you know,
they're
like,
pretty with the...
Like the old rich families.
They care.
Yeah.
Yeah, they care.
They're old rich. I'm new poor. No, I'm old poor. I've always been poor.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm
old poor.
I'm very well established poor. I've never seen a positive number in my bank account poor. That's where I'm at. Thanks, OSAP.
Yeah, so to be eligible to be in this book, your family had to play an active and important role in Dutch society, fulfilling high positions in the government, in prestigious commissions, and other prominent public posts for over six generations or 150 years. So that just kind of shows you how old rich this family was, that they were in this book. And House Canton... that I spoke of, that wasn't their only property, of course. Like, they had pretty extensive properties in the Netherlands, various villas. Another famous one that they had was called Villa Henny, which is in Zeist. And I actually work in Zeist, so I could go check it out if I wanted to. But it does not surprise me that it's in Zeist at all, because they have so many, like, really pretty villas there. It's like the whole town is just really big villas. So I should go check it out. But now Villa Henny is a national monument. It's in the top 100 of the national monuments in the Netherlands. It's valued at 2.5 million euros today, and it's still almost in its complete original state as when it was built. So, but anyways, you get the point. Mega rich, important family is living at House Canton. And not just living there, but their business headquarters were there as well for this conservatrix company. Okay, we just paused for a quick second there so we could look up how to pronounce their names, because I did not want to, like, butcher them terribly.
I don't mind, but Courtney was feeling guilty.
I was feeling bad. So, Boudewijn and Ewout, they were 17 years old and 15 years old, respectively, when the body was found on their property. And the body was found by accident. It was by a bricklayer who was emptying out, like, an old cesspool in the garden. So the police were called, obviously, and an investigation was launched. It turned out that the body had probably been there for at least a year, and it was the body of a 14-year-old boy named Theo Mastwijk, who was friends with the two boys in the house.
Uh-oh.
Theo had been a missing person, but it was thought that he was a runaway. So soon, the two rich boys in the house, Boudewijn and Ewout, they became the prime suspects in what would become a murder case. And another one of their friends was included as a suspect as well, 16-year-old Henny Verkoven. And this is kind of confusing. So Boudewijn and Ewout, their last name is Henny. And their friend, his first name is Henny. So, lots of weird names going on in this episode.
Just you know, name people different things. Netherlands. Just name people different things. That's all you gotta do.
Yeah, but Henny, he was not, like, a rich and prominent person. He was from a working class family. He just happened to be friends with these two rich boys. So, yeah, it seems like it kind of came out in the newspapers that this body was found, and the main suspects were the boys' friends. So because of that, this became really sensational and really big in the Netherlands when this happened. So let's go back in time again. So in the spring and summer of 1960, which is the year before the body was found, these four boys, Boudewijn, Ewout, Henny, and Theo, they were kind of being delinquents around the city they lived in. It really wasn't anything major, but it's also kind of not like they were just being boys, you know? Like, they were committing...
I also hate that excuse.
I hate that, like, excuse too.
Like, they were a better person, maybe?
Right. Like, they were committing some minor vandalism and theft in and around barn. And then on one night, Theo stole a moped, which was probably one of the bigger thefts that they had committed so far. And Theo got caught by the police right away with this stolen moped. So the police told Theo, like, okay, you have to come to the police station tomorrow to make a statement. And Theo went to his three friends and told them what happened. And this made the other three boys really nervous. Like, I think that they thought maybe that Theo, like, he'd be talking to the police and he'd be telling them too much, or to get himself out of trouble, he would implicate the other boys in things. But the boys were just really nervous that Theo had to go and talk to the police. And they didn't want to get caught, even though what they were doing was pretty minor. Like, it still terrified them to get caught. So the boys told Theo that he couldn't go talk to the police, and instead they decided to hide him in their attic. Or they called it the tower room of their fancy villa. The tower room. So they told him to go hide there and lay low for a while. And they hid him in this tower room for 5 weeks.
Well, that's impressive, but also, like, somehow ended in death. So really, right. Not a great...
So not much is actually known about this 5 week period in general. Actually, in this whole case, not a lot is known because the records have been destroyed. So we basically just have some newspaper articles and the court documents. But I'm going to talk about this a little bit more later too. So anyways, yeah, Theo is hiding in the rich brother's attic for 5 weeks. And at some point, it turns more into a kidnapping then hiding him in there. Like, at first, I think Thea was like, okay, yeah, like, I'll lay low, I'll hide from the police up here. But it came to a point where Theo wanted to leave the attic. No surprise, because you're, like, spending 5 weeks in an attic.
And you're a teenage boy.
Yeah.
Like.
But the other three boys were like, no, like, you're a liability. We can't let you go. So, like, the tensions are growing and growing. Theo was becoming harder to hide, probably protesting a lot, probably trying to leave. And they're trying to convince him to stay and keep him in this attic. And then it came to a point where they really couldn't hide him anymore. So the Henny family was going to be going on vacation and bringing Boudivine and Avote with them. So there was this, like, deadline looming over their heads where they're like...
Yeah, can't miss your vacay, so you gotta go kill your bestie to get out of there.
Yeah, and as we'll see later, too, vacay is very important for these boys. So they had this deadline. They didn't know what to do. And in the end, they came to a very drastic decision by deciding that Theo must die.
Like, really, it seems like they've gone so high stakes for such a low stakes situation. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to pay a fine for stealing a moped and maybe get, like, a couple years in jail. Maybe.
Probably not even that. Like, you're going to get a slap you're a minor. On the wrist. Yeah.
Yeah, you're a minor. Unless you ran over an old lady whilst stealing the moped, I really don't think they're going to throw the book at you.
I definitely think it was, like, a group think thing where they were just... Yeah, they just built this up so high in their head that this was such a bad thing. And I mean, it did kind of turn into a kidnapping.
I know, but like, honestly, like, I'm trying to follow the chain of thoughts because, like, even if you've done all this other crap with this group of boys, there's no way to connect all that other crap to the kid stealing the moped. So they found the kid stealing the moped and all he has to do is be like, yeah, I had a stupid idea. I was walking through town and I was like, I bet I could steal that moped and I stole it. My bad. Slap on the wrist, whatever. Like, you don't even have to mention your friends. And if they bring up your friends, just be like, my friends weren't with me when you, like, there's no reason that you have to tie the rest of the boys in. So, like, I don't understand why this ended up in murder.
Yeah. And obviously murder is way worse than a little bit of vandalism. Yeah. So they decided that Theo had to die. At first, they tried to, like, poison him, like a random poison attempt, but it did not work at all. So then they decided that they would, like, lure him out of the attic on false pretenses. They told him they were going to give him a shower because poor dude hadn't had a shower in 5 weeks. And then they were going to bring him to the border so he could run away from the police.
Again, so extreme. Like, what the...
Yeah, they thought this was, like... they thought that this was, like, world-ending to them. So they did bring him out of the attic, but instead of doing what they told him they were going to do, they first attempted to strangle him with a clothesline thread, but that also did not work.
Because the sheer physical strength that would take.
Yeah, it's so thin.
This is such a dumb. These boys are dumb. Smart, dumb boys.
So when that didn't work, they hit him over the head with a machete and killed him via blows to the head. Throughout the trials and everything that we'll get to later, we still don't know which one of the boys was the one that actually, like, threw the blows and ultimately killed Theo. Boudivine has always pointed the finger at Henny, and Henny has always pointed the finger at Boudivine. But after Theo was killed, they put him into the well on the property, and they covered his body in quicklime, hoping that this would make him decompose faster. And it actually did work, because when... he was found a year and a half later. He was a complete skeleton. So he was killed on August 1st, 1960, about a year and 3 months before his body was found. And he became a missing person. I feel like he didn't really have close family that it seems like he went missing, but there wasn't like a huge search for him. The three boys told the police that Theo had left the country and entered the Foreign Legion. Like some foreign army. I don't really know what that is. But I think everyone just kind of accepted that story, thinking, okay, like he's just a runaway. He really left. So after Theo's body is found on October 27th, 1961, The friend, Henny, he was actually the first to be arrested a few days later on November 2nd, 1961. He was caught because Theo had previously named him to the police somehow. Like, he'd previously said that he had, like, committed thefts with Henny. So when Theo went missing and was found murdered, they questioned Henny, and he was, like, suspicious as fuck. So that's how he kind of came on police radar. And then he brought in Beau Devine and Eve out. So by November 4th, all three boys had been arrested. And the newspapers were going crazy at this point with this story. It was, yeah, becoming really huge. This part I think is funny. So during, like, the first investigations that they did with Beau Devine, he somehow escaped police custody. Even though he was arrested, he was in jail, whatever. He escaped during his interrogation on November 7th, so like 3 days later. And there was this like 2 day period in the Netherlands where everybody in the country was looking for him. And then he was literally found, yeah, 2 days later, just sitting at home. Just, you know, on the couch at home. Hey, what's up?
Again, A, what is the point of escaping if you're just going to go sit at home? And B, why all of the, like, you could have just gone in the very beginning and let your friend go to the police and none of this would have, nope, it's fine, everything's fine, these boys are stupid, and I just have to live with it.
And when Beau Devine was found, the public prosecutor personally, ooh, there's a lot of P's here, the public prosecutor personally picked Beau Devine up in his private car and drove him back to the police station.
You really blasted that alliteration in that
sense. Yeah, there's a lot of peace. This made the public really angry, and the prosecutor would later be punished for, like, this unfair treatment. And this actually started the whole conversation in the media of class justice, which is a really big theme throughout this entire case. Like, it was two rich kids and their friend who had to answer for the murder of someone from a lower social class, right? And because these two kids were mega rich, it was thought that they were being treated more leniently than a normal person would be treated. And there were some really big examples of this throughout it. So one of them was the fact that while they were in prison waiting for trial, the two brothers were allowed to go on holiday with their family, and they were seen, like, sailing on a boat, having a grand old time. The press lost its shit when that happens. And they could obviously afford, like, the very best lawyers. But their friend, Henny, he was not in the same situation. And he actually did, like, a fundraiser to help pay for his lawyer, which raised about 6,000 guilders.
To just say that you had, in fact, killed your friend? I wouldn't have helped you with your fundraiser.
Yeah, I feel like that wouldn't work because, yeah, it's like, I'm fundraising money to get a lawyer because I murdered someone. I feel like people would just be like, well, I'm gonna donate to this cat over here.
You could have just not murdered someone.
Yeah. Exactly. On March 14th or 15th of 1963, we're still before the trial here, the boys went and participated in a reconstruction of the murder at the villa. So the boy's story was essentially that Evout was the lookout, and it was actually Beau Devine and Henny who together, like, did the deed and got rid of the body. But the story of this reconstruction is actually pretty crazy because it was just learned about in 2018 after a picture book was found. So they had no clue that this happened. And as I said earlier, like, the records for this case have been destroyed. Just because that's how the Netherlands does things. Like, it's customary when it's a closed file, eventually after some time has passed, they are going to destroy the records. So this picture book that they found in 2018, which is literally like 50 years later, it was supposed to be destroyed, but somebody in the investigation, and we don't know who, they kept it. And then they eventually gave it to the broadcasting editors of a company in Hilversum in 2018. So, like, just a couple years ago. So instead of being destroyed, this picture book ended up online, and it provided a lot of information into what possibly happened. Otherwise, we wouldn't have much to go on. And that is literally, like, what I am using for this episode, is because we have this picture book that gave us this information. So in the reconstruction, like, it was like this whole picture book, tons of pictures, whole bunch of descriptions. And in the reconstruction, there were numerous detectives, actors, sniffer dogs, and the two boys, Beau Devine and Henny, were there. And they had to show how they killed Theo and how his body was hidden in the well in the photos. Like, so, like, one of the photos, for example, had the description, Theo, 14, hangs lifeless upside down between his two friends above the well. And you can just, like, see them just, like, holding. It's like a dummy, not really him in the photo, but they're
would
just
holding
it. Would
we call them friends at that point?
No.
I don't. I would say murderers.
At the end of March in 1963, the boys finally went to trial in Utrecht. And it was the same story that I mentioned before. So, like, the boys accused the other one. They always said that Evoet was the lookout. That story was consistent through all the stories. But who actually laid the blows, we don't know. It was either Beau Devine or Henny, and they've always accused each other. The prosecution was looking at 12 years in prison for Beau Devine and Henny and 7 years in prison for Evoet. And on March 29th, the verdict came back. The boys were found guilty. Beau Devine and Henny both received 9 years in prison and the behavioral therapy after. Everyone gets that. Like, most offenders get that if they're, like, the violent offenders. Evoet received 6 years, also with the behavioral therapy afterwards. So when sentencing, the court took into account the young age of the victim, the gruesome way in which the murder was carried out, and against these facts, the court considered that Beau Devine and Henny were also young at the time of the murder, and that there was just apparently, like, no adult supervision to any of these boys at any point in time.
Well, because otherwise they would have been like, it's a misdemeanor, it's like a little crime, just have your friend go to the cops.
Yeah, exactly.
And this whole kidnapping in the attic and then murdering our bestie wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, that's exactly what the court said. They ruled that there was, like, conspiracy thinking happening between the three boys that could have easily been broken by any parent or adult who just said, yo, like, this is not a problem at all. And the boys would end up only serving 2/3 of their sentence, which is, again, customary in the Netherlands if they have good behavior and do all the treatment that they're supposed to do.
Ugh.
But the question of class privilege came up again while Beau Devine was in prison. So to make his return to society better, Beau Devine was transferred from prison to, like, the psychological clinic in Utrecht around the end of 1965, meaning he was actually only in prison for 2 years. And at this clinic that he went to, he was allowed to continue his studies in mathematics and physics at the University of Utrecht. He was also allowed to keep his sport, which was rowing, while he was locked up. So, I mean, there's no canals or anything in prison, so I don't know how that worked. Like, did they let him out?
He's got a rowing machine.
Maybe.
Got a rowing machine. Yeah.
Maybe. But I mean, if he's on a rowing team, I don't know. But so his treatment plan actually followed standard procedures at the time, but because he was, like, rich and because they thought this was class privilege, like, there was a lot of fuss in the media about it. And maybe, maybe he was treated better than most criminals are. And I think that the Netherlands kind of, like, did take a good look at this and see if he was being treated any differently. But both Beau Devine and Evoet, they would be released from prison. And shortly after they were released, they took over the management of the family insurance company Conservatrix at House Canton, where they literally committed murder. They just went on with their life, ran the company, continued being rich as hell afterwards.
So literally goes to show you that you could have just, I don't know, turned your friend in for his misdemeanor crime of stealing a scooter and not murdered him.
Yeah, you would have had, like, I mean, it would have played out the same way, I guess, because
yep.
even with murder, you got away. Well, not got away, but like had a pretty easy go with it.
They got away with it. That was pretty.
Had a pretty easy go. Yeah.
They spent a university degree in prison, not even, and then came home.
Yeah. And just continued being rich. So in 2007, the brothers were listed in 178th place for the richest people in the Netherlands, with an estimated worth of 147 million euros. This was done in the Quote 500 magazine. So this is an annual magazine in the Netherlands that comes out that lists like the 500 richest people in the country. But along with talking about the brothers' rank and net worth in the magazine, they also talked about the fact that they were convicted murderers, which stirred things up again. There's also been several movies, plays, and other things that have come out over the years. One of the most well-known ones is a book and movie of the same name. It's called Blood Brothers. And the brothers have like fought really hard to like hush this after they got out. Like, they despise anything that comes out about them. They've threatened to sue almost everything, even this like magazine of the 500 richest people. But their suing attempts have never worked out.
Because you did the murder. It's not slander.
Yeah.
You're murderers.
You did it. but it does look like more recently they took a big downward hit. So in 2014, the Netherlands Authority for the Financial Markets raided Nuvema, which was like the funeral branch of the conservatrix company. So I guess the funeral branch was doing some like really shady shit, because in 2017, Conservatrix was sold to an American company called Eli Global for literally just €1. €1. They sold like this 150-year like line of company in their family for €1.
That kind of happened, and I don't know the details, but that kind of happened to one of the funeral homes in my town like fairly recently, within like the last 10 years. It literally had to close down because they had been like scamming people.
Are people not dying anymore?
No, we still have like, okay, so the thing to understand about my town is we have 3 funeral homes, maybe 4, but only one of them was a funeral home and crematorium, and the funeral home and crematorium got shut down because they were like scamming people for their funeral insurance, and it like came out, like I don't remember how they discovered it, but it like came out and it was like this huge thing, and it was one of the like really old rich families in my town. So when it happened, everyone was like, oh, scandal. And so, yeah, they literally shut the funeral home down. And now my town no longer has a crematorium. So if people need to get cremated in the nearby area, they need to be like shipped to the city.
Shipped. I like how you use the word shipped.
Well, it's a body. It's not nice, like they just hop in a car and roll out. Like,
it makes me think of the show
shipped.
Ozarks. I don't know if you've seen it, because they have a funeral company that is like a front for their drug laundering.
Funeral homes, man. That's the business to get into.
Apparently funeral homes. And that's really sad, too, because you're like fucking over people who just lost like a loved one. So that's even more fucked up.
Yeah.
So Bo Devine, he died in 2017 at the age of 74 in Antwerp, Belgium, but Evoet and Henny are still alive today, just going about life. But that's the story about the murder of Theo here.
3 shitty boys with shitty names did this shitty thing, and I don't like any of them.
Yeah.
The end.
Rich people thinking they'll be... No, it's kind of confusing, because it's like rich people thinking, some people actually, because there's actually like not a real reason known why this happened. Most people just go with the idea that they didn't want to get caught with the petty theft. But some people say like, no, these like rich kids just thought they could do anything and they just killed one of their friends.
Well, because as like good human beings, we try to be like, well, someone had to have a motive, and they weren't just like a dead husk of a human being that just wanted to see if they could kill someone and get away with it.
Yeah. And a lot of the books and movies and stuff that have come out about this, they took like a lot of creative liberty and they made it so that these guys are like really evil, which I mean, they kind of are, but it's just, you know, just like telling the story where like they're those masterminds who...
Mm-hmm. Who wanted to get away with murder.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But well, that is all that I have for today.
Thanks for hanging out with a bunch of Christians and us. And not like the religious type of Christians, just like a bunch of men
named Christian. And we will see you back in 2 weeks for another case. So talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes of Spook Pod. New ones are out every other Friday. Available now for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to chat? Email us at thespookpod@gmail.com or follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Reddit at Spook Pod.
For a full list of episodes, more deets, or to see what's coming next, visit our website, spookpod.com.
This has been a presentation of Mostly Awkward Media.
See you next time.